Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Florida has frostbite. South Carolina has snow. The Midwest's Arctic temperatures are shattering records. And New England's getting hit with a bomb cyclone. In the frigid wake of 2017's weather mega disasters, hurricanes and fires, floods and heat, Mother Nature's wrath continues to rage. Will 2018 be more of the same? This hour On Point, extreme weather and what is to come. Joining me first this hour from Atlanta, Georgia, is Dale Eck, head of forecast operations for the Americas at the Weather Channel. Dale Eck, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Good to be here, Jane. How you doing?
Well, it's coming down hard where we are, to be honest, and millions of people across a huge swath of this country are hunkering down right now. Give us an update on this massive storm, Dale.
Yeah, the comment you made earlier, bomb ogenesis, that basically refers to a storm system that deepens 24 millibars within 24 hours, and we've well surpassed that. The storm is really intensifying off the New Jersey coast right now. We're getting reports of wind gusts in New England and also in the Delmarva area of 50 to 70 miles an hour. So winds are really cranking. Heavy snow extends from the Delmarva area all the way up into New England. And the storm, fortunately, is going to move at a pretty brisk pace, which will limit the amount of snow that we're going to see, but we are definitely looking for amounts of a foot or so and even more, up to 18 inches from Long Island through eastern New England and down east Maine.
So you use the word that's been used a lot, bombogenesis. It's an actual meteorological term, right? Tell us about pressure systems and millibars you mentioned briefly.
Yeah, basically we in the meteorology field, we measure the surface pressure in millibars, and so you have high pressure systems, and the pressures can get up to about 1050, and some of the lowest hurricanes can get pressures down near 900 and even below millibars. So that's kind of the range of what we see on the surface. And when a storm system is going through an intensification phase, the pressure will be dropping. And if that pressure drop is more than 24 millibars in 24 hours, that's considered intensification, and we call it a bomb or bombogenesis. Mm.
So blizzard warnings all up and down the East Coast from Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, up the coast to eastern Maine. This is a storm, actually, that started in the Gulf of Mexico a couple of days ago.
Well, actually, what it was spawned from, we've been in this cold grip in the central and eastern part of the United States now for over a week, and that broad trough that's been bringing that cold air down, that's one of the main ingredients you need for one of these big snowstorms. The second thing you need is moisture, and finally, there is a storm that is throwing moisture back into that cold air and this rapidly intensifying low. So the low itself did form kind of near Florida or off the east coast of Florida, and ever since then, it's been intensifying and tracking north-northeast. As you said, we had ice as far south as just to the west of Gainesville, Florida, yesterday morning from this thing, and ice then became more of a snow event as it moved north. Charleston getting about 7 inches of snow from this. Some of the latest reports, the snow's about to wind down in Norfolk, and they've had up to a foot in Norfolk, and the heavy snow now is moving through Delaware and New Jersey, southeast Pennsylvania, and really expanding very quickly to the north, already snowing up in central Maine. So the brunt of this is going to be today, and then it'll be ending across New England probably mainly the first part of tonight. So quick hitter, which will keep the amounts from getting ridiculous, like 2 or 3 feet, but foot accumulations are definitely going to be likely at the core of the storm from coastal New Jersey, Long Island, and central and eastern New England.
Well, the list of incidents caused by this winter storm are harrowing and growing. Here is reporter Alex Perez of ABC's Good Morning America. This was Tuesday.
In Texas, a police officer slipping on a frozen highway, nearly hit by an oncoming car, and a whiteout in Michigan leading to this multi-car pileup. In St. Paul, Minnesota, 10 people rushed to the hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning believed to be caused by a faulty boiler. The bitter cold conditions impossible for battling fires. In Nebraska, negative 10 degree temperatures instantly turning the spray into ice. Firefighters in D.C. forced to use flares to thaw their extension ladders.
Dale Leck of the Weather Channel, I mean, this is serious business in a lot of places. Talk about the danger associated with this storm.
Well, the danger obviously is travel right now. I mean, we were getting snowfall rates of 1 to 3 inches an hour as this storm is intensifying. So it's the type of snow that you shouldn't be on the roads. If you can avoid it, you need to do so. It's the kind of snow you're going to get stuck in. This is the kind of snow that it's coming down at such a rate, no matter how many plows they have out there, it's hard to keep up on this type of storm. So that's one of the real troubling things with this. The second one is the wind. We do believe that from, the Delmarva area up through New England with winds gusting to 60 and 70 miles an hour and all the snow that's coming down, the threat of power outages is rather high. And the fact that this storm is going to be followed by some even colder, record cold temperatures as we go on through Friday and the weekend. So if you lose power, it could be life-threatening if you can't find another place to find a shelter.
You mentioned this frigidly cold weather, this deadly cold weather that we've been stuck in. Bob in Watertown, New York, has a thought and a question about that. Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes, ma'am. Very good program. And one thing that no one seems to be talking about, could any of this weather, this very, very cold weather, very early in the year, be manipulated? I'm thinking Olive Harp. Now, I know this isn't coast to coast, and I'm not getting a conspiracy theory or anything like that, but weather manipulation has been going on. Has that ever been factored into any of these considerations?
All right, Bob, thank you. Dale Eck?
It's part of nature. We've seen extreme events in the past. We will probably see them going into the future. It is my opinion that there is no manipulation going on. It's just natural events that occur in the weather.
Let's go to southeast now. Joining me from Florida is Tom Sorrells, the chief meteorologist at WKMG Channel 6 in Orlando. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Jane. How are you?
Well, how are you is the question. You've had some strange weather, strange goings-ons down there.
I'm a little chilly this morning, Jane, but going through nothing compared to you. How's that?
Yeah, well, 38 degrees in Orlando yesterday. That, for Floridians, that's cold.
You know, this morning, Jane, we woke up to 31.
Oh, my.
So, frost all over the place, freezing temperatures in Central Florida, right in Orlando for the first time since 2014, and I haven't had two or three nights in a row of this since way back in 2010. Mm. So it is unusual. It's not record-setting. Record for this date is 28, but we did get to 31 this morning.
Mm. So talk to us about the wind chill, the advisories that are going on, this bomb cyclone that it's being called, this storm that's impacting Florida.
Yeah, I was just listening to you and Dale discuss that, and he described it pretty well. It started down here very close to Florida. Had that bomb genesis started, like, lower, that snow they had in South Carolina yesterday could have been mine. We've never had that happen this far south with 7 inches of snow in recorded history in my lifetime. Mm. It's 31 degrees for an overnight low. If that low had formed just off the East Coast and brought that moisture to us, we would have had something to really talk about this morning. But what we have to talk about here are the wind chill factors, the fact it is so cold. We woke up to 25 degrees for a low this morning in Gainesville, 31 in Orlando, and out at the Cape this morning we dropped to 35, Melbourne went to 33, even as far south as Miami, the low this morning was 44. Hmm. Not freezing, but you can bet the bagels down there are kind of cold this morning.
Yeah, you bet. Snow came to Tallahassee for the first time in nearly three decades on Wednesday. Here's Tallahassee resident Charlene Barr and her daughter. They went outside to take a look.
It's snowing! I can't believe it.
This is the best day ever.
Well, fun and maybe a little novel, but, a lot of homes in Florida are not built for this, not built for the cold, poor insulation. Yeah,
we really aren't, especially up in Tallahassee. New developments of homes down here don't deal with it very well. Older homes don't deal with it at all. We're talking most of our houses have single-pane windows, not as much insulation. We're only built to survive summer for 9 months out of the year, So we have high ceilings so the heat can rise. And so all of a sudden it gets to wintertime. We get an outburst of cold air like this coming in. all of a sudden we have a hard time keeping our houses warm. So where in the Midwest people run to the store for like milk, bread, eggs to survive 3 days of snowed-in winter, down here we run to the store to buy logs for a fire, mm-hmm. maybe some hand warmers, mm-hmm. and all of our stores ran out of that kind of stuff yesterday. Mm.
So 25-degree temperatures in Gainesville, 30s in Orlando. I mean, I'm thinking about your citrus industry down there. How are the oranges doing in this cold weather?
Well, you know what's really weird, Jane? Previous cold snaps, like in the late 70s, late 80s, early 90s, kind of ran the oranges out of Orange County. Orlando is in Orange County, Florida, and we're down to about 2,000 acres of citrus growth in our county. All the citrus stuff is going farther south of here, into Polk County, Winter Haven, those spots south and west. We do still have some growth over in Indian River area, but for the most part, I think the citrus farmers made it through okay. Along the Merritt Island Indian River area last night, the overnight low was about 36 or 37. The farmers that take it hard in Central Florida are your fern growers. About 90% of all the greenery, like if you get flowers for Valentine's Day in a couple of weeks, hint, hint, hubby, chances are the greenery in that came from Volusia County, Florida. 90% of all the ferns and greenery come from right here. So they have to start frost protection when the temperature goes to 36. And let me check. Okay, right now in Volusia County, the temperature is 39.
Okay,
right now.
You're close.
So those poor souls have, well, but last night the overnight low went to 29.
Oh, dear.
So they've been frost protecting the ferns and the greenery since probably 8 o'clock last night.
Mm. So what's your forecast? Last 10 seconds here,
Tom. Okay, last 10 seconds for me. This cold snap stays, and that's the problem. We have frost and freeze warnings again tonight with an overnight low in Orlando, 32. High tomorrow, 52. Then Friday night, our low is 38, which is much more manageable.
All right. Well, bundle up, friends down in Florida. Tom Searles, thank you so much. Chief meteorologist at WKMG Channel 6 in Orlando. We are discussing extreme weather this hour. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This, with the recommendation for another podcast for you to check out, namely How I Built This. Every week, I talk to the people behind some of the most inspiring companies and brands in the world, with stories of incredible persistence, grit, and insight. You can find How I Built This on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the extreme weather going on this hour. A deep freeze going on in a lot of places, along with snow and severe, often extreme weather. Here is Chicago resident Jeannie Rivera describing what's going on in her backyard, this freezing weather. This is Tuesday.
You thought you were cold last year. You thought you were cold last month, but you weren't cold. Now you're cold. It hurts. It hurts the face.
And here is NBC News reporter Katie Beck this morning in Norfolk, Virginia.
We are experiencing blizzard conditions here in Norfolk. Wind gusts up to 35 miles an hour. Heavy snowfall since last night. They're expecting somewhere between 8 and 10 inches of snow on the ground here in Norfolk before this event is over. This is extremely rare weather for the South, and as you can imagine, causing quite a bit of chaos.
So this hour, I'm speaking with Dale Eck, head of forecast operations for the Americas at the Weather Channel. And joining me now from Princeton, New Jersey, is Bernadette Woods-Plackey, the chief meteorologist and director of Climate Central's Climate Matters program. Bernadette Woods-Plackey, welcome to the program. Nice to have you on Point.
Hello, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So how would you describe what's going on out there in much of this country?
Well, I think that Dale and Tom have both summed up what's currently going on pretty well. It's extreme. It's pretty crazy weather. And I'll tell you, looking out my window right now, I'm not quite in Boston like you are, but those winds are howling, and it is hard to see across the street right here in New Jersey.
One of our listeners from our website, Neil, wants to know from you, please ask about the weakened polar vortex, which is caused by melting ice, melting Arctic ice. It is much warmer in the Arctic now with climate change and I guess much colder around here. How would you answer that question?
Well, to get into the climate change conversation with this, yes, this is absolutely extreme weather. I'm not trying to say that it's not, and it is bitterly cold across a good portion of the United States. But when you talk about climate change, you have to broaden your perspective, both in time and in space. And when you look at the rest of the globe, it is very warm in a lot of locations, even in parts of our country, like you were saying, our southwest coast, and then heading up into Alaska, it is incredibly warm, and that's generally the area there and somewhat northeast of there where we're getting a lot of this air from the polar vortex. So the air itself is not record-breaking at that point, but what's happening is it's breaking down and coming into places where it's not normally sitting around. So it is bitterly cold for all the way down into Florida and parts of New Jersey and even the northern plains, which minus 30 degrees right now in northern Minnesota. Mm.
So let me get this straight. We shouldn't confuse weather a few days or weeks in one region with climate. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's part of the conversation, is even in a climate-changed world, we're still going to get weather. It's still going to happen. And in places where it gets cold, it's going to get cold. The thing is, though, that a lot of our weather is being tweaked by climate change. And so even though we're going to get some of these storms like we're getting right now, it's the frequency of them. We're getting more extreme weather, but we're not necessarily getting this round of cold as often in a world that is warmed.
Mm. Let's get Justin in here from La Crosse, Georgia. Hi, Justin. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
I was wondering how much of a correlation can be made between when China has a really cold evening or week and they turn on all their coal plants and all those CO2 emissions make it up into the atmosphere and oscillate or jostle the jet stream, mm-hmm. which causes all the oscillations that you see.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's been like a pattern for like 8 or 10 years.
Justin, thank you. Bernadette, what do you see? What do you say?
That is an interesting question and an interesting way to look at it, really trying to connect things, because everything really is connected when you're talking about weather here. What it does to our jet stream here is affecting jet streams in other parts of the world. But I can't say that exactly what is happening with turning on coal plants in China around one specific event is the reason for what's happening right here. Again, when you look at it in time, it is adding more and more carbon dioxide to our atmosphere, which is changing our weather patterns and changing our overall general averages of temperature influence everything. But I can't say that one specific event is the reason for what we're getting.
Justin, thanks for the call. So Bernadette, 2017 was the year of severe extreme weather in a lot of places. Talk about NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, how they track their disasters and what they've documented.
Yeah, now this is really interesting because to me, the perspective of 2017, I know we've already jumped into 2018, but some of this what we're dealing with right now does carry back into last year. 2017 to me was the year of extremes because certain parts of the country may have gotten one type of weather in certain years that we would talk about, but almost our entire country suffered some form of extreme weather or climate event. And for NOAA, what they do is they track these billion-dollar disasters, and they do it just for GDP as time goes on. But going back to 1980, so not the oldest data set, but enough years here to give some perspective to things, they look at these number of billion-dollar disasters. And since 1980 up until today, the average is about 5.5 a year. This past year, we had at least 15 of those.
Wow.
And they came in all forms, from the hurricanes, which are well-documented, people are still suffering from, to the wildfires that we're still trying to put out, the Thomas Fire out in California,
right,
to even some extremes that happen in the Southeast with a snap of cold in March that damaged an entire peach crop because it had been so warm early in the year. So there's quite a range of events and over 15 of those billion-dollar disasters this year.
And so what does that say to you?
That is a sign that we are getting more extreme. Now, again, that's one year. You have to put that in perspective. But like I said, there's about a 5.5 per year since 1980. If you even just take a snapshot of the past 5 years, That average has increased to about 10.5. So we're seeing more of these more frequently. Now, that does not mean that next year per se, or this year, I guess, 2018, is going to get more than 2017. But over chunks of time, looking at those averages, we're seeing those increase.
Are there maps or forecasts that give you an idea of what we're in for in 2018 or beyond?
Well, there are, and there are different types of maps and different types of models for different time frames and different locations of the world. Climate models in general can take you out hundreds to a couple hundreds of years. There are weather models that will take you out a couple of weeks, and then there's some in-between that you can gather from what's going on between the current weather and some of our long-term patterns. So there are different ranges of how you can look at this.
So, Dale, I jump back in here from the Weather Channel. What do you make of what Bernadette just said about the increase times three in the number of extreme weather events we're seeing?
Yeah, and I think the net of this is, as I talk to people about, well, how does global climate change and global warming affect the day-to-day weather? And what we've been seeing, I've been doing this now for 35 years or more, and what you see in the weather patterns, the jet streams across the globe, you've got more warmth in the atmosphere in general. And what is that is leading to is it is enhancing where the large ridges form, and therefore downstream of that, you're going to get some very deep troughs. So while, and it is that, if you, as I look back 25, 30 years ago, the atmospheric jet streams were more zonal. They were just going west to east around the northern hemisphere, and now you see them more highly amplified. So ridges go well north, like Bernadette said. It's warm in Alaska right now, and then they get this deep trough coming into the central and eastern United States, and it's real cold. So while and when you get these patterns that are very highly amplified, they tend to move very slowly. So that's why you can get these extreme events like extreme rainfall amounts. You can get extreme cold in some places while you're getting extreme heat in others. And you can also get, you know, extreme snowstorms, if you will, because they're moving a little slower and they're going, you know, south to north more than west to east.
That's an interesting explanation I hadn't heard before. Ed, in Holliston, Massachusetts, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Go ahead.
I don't know that I have a question. I have more of a comment. I was up in Plattsburgh, New York over Christmas, and it's when the cold hit and came down, and now I'm home, and it's cold here. I'm out in my shop right now, and my chickens are out here because it's too cold in the coop. But I just out of curiosity, I looked up, I put Moscow, Russia on my phone to see what the temperature is, and their temperatures for the last week and the week coming are lows about low 30s and highs in the high 30s. And we're freezing to death over here. And then I did latitudes, and I'm at about 42. Moscow's at 55. And just extremes.
Extremes.
Just an observation.
Yeah, Ed, thank you so much there in Holliston, Massachusetts. Dale Eck, what do you make of Ed's?
Well, I think it's this high amplitude and the warming atmosphere. So while we're in a deep trough here and the cold has really relocated itself into eastern Canada and the east and southeast United States, there's a ridge that has poked up across, you know, central Europe, and that's why the temperatures in Moscow are warm. So you tend to get, and as Bernadette said, these extremes. So with a warmer atmosphere, it doesn't mean the cold completely goes away. It's still going to get cold near the pole, North Pole, in the winter time. It's that cold air, there's less of it, and it can get displaced to the south, and then it gets replaced by a warming ridge somewhere else around the globe.
Ed, thanks so much for the call. Here's Victor in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Victor. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, what was just talked about, my comment, what we've seen is with the jet stream slowing down in its speed, some of these storm fronts tend to be moving past much slower, and it has unexpected side effects. When we get those warm air further north or further south, it heats up those regions, causes more ice melt. I read a report in National Geographic talking about warmer temperatures in Antarctica caused greater amounts of sea ice because the more fresh water that melted off the continent ended up desalinating the ocean, which meant in the wintertime you saw more extreme weather events. So what we're just seeing is it's really exacerbating the problem that when we get cold, it gets colder. When we get snow, we get more of it. When we get heat, we get more. And it tends to almost wobble the weather patterns that we were used to 25 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Victor, thank you. Thank you very much for the call up in Buffalo. And by the way, your call reminded me of that terrible pileup on I-90. More than two dozen vehicles crashed outside Buffalo on Tuesday, killing at least one. Here's a woman who drove by the pileup, captured this video.
Wow! Look at that truck! Yo, this whole road is about to be shut down for years.
This is Jeep. The Benz?
Oh, no!
That is ridiculous.
Look at this right here! Oh, man. Wow!
Yeah, quite a scene. And Buffalo resident Katie Wood, here she is in the pileup on I-90 when her van ended up stuck in a ditch. Her father risks the cold to come and rescue her. Here's Katie.
You couldn't see a gosh darn thing in front of you. Everything was blurry. There was complete whiteout. Right now, you could even tell that it's complete whiteout. I still can't feel my fingertips just from walking, not even a quarter, you know, from my vehicle. It's just cold. It's so cold.
Dale Eck, talk more about that frigid cold weather you mentioned a little bit earlier. What about this cold pattern that we've been locked in from Canada to Mexico?
The deep trough that has brought that in has locked in. And as we said, these troughs and ridges, these higher amplitude patterns tend to lock themselves in for longer periods of time. So we're in it right now. The good news that I have, though, is that as we go to the second half of the weekend and into early next week, it looks like this trough is going to relax some. So we're going to get our temperatures back to near average as we get into Monday and Tuesday of next week. And then looking longer range, no real big extremes are jumping out at me at this point. We may just see a general warming a little bit above average as we head on into later next week and down the road.
In Boston here, we tied a record for the most consecutive days at or below 20 degrees, which is a record that was set 100 years ago. Bernadette Woods-Plackey, talk about this dangerously cold weather from your perspective, from climate change. What do you see?
Well, again, yes, it's cold. And you see how far back you had to go to break that record, because we're not getting these types of cold snaps that often anymore. They do still happen, and they will continue to, but the frequency is really trying to give the perspective on the bigger picture here is what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I guess as far as the cold with preparation for these next few days, I think Dale covered it early in the segment of how people need to be prepared, what the threats are. The good news is with snow, though, as compared to tornadoes and hurricanes, is if you're smart and if you can follow some of these rules, for the most part, a lot of people can just enjoy the snow.
Let's go to Jim in Houghton, Michigan. Jim, are you enjoying the snow? How are you doing up there?
Yes, we are. In fact, I just a quick statement, and then I have a quick question.
Okay.
First of all, we experience what would be national news pretty much on a regularly weekly basis. We get a ton of snow, blowing snow, cold temperatures, and we just deal with it, and that's just the way it is, and we know spring will be coming at some point. The other question I have is, I know that we monitor weather, and it's such a short amount of time. I mean, even if we talk 100 years, what is 100 years and really in the Earth terms? But my question is because down at the coffee shop, these guys are always grilling me, and they asked me, well, why wasn't there climate change, or was there climate elements that changed with the ice ages and the warm-ups, and there wasn't one smokestack or one car on the face of the planet? What would be the explanation for all of those extreme weather patterns that have happened in the past? And I'll take my answer off the air.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Bernadette, help Jim and the folks in the coffee shop.
Absolutely, and that's a great question. Yes, we have had climate changes in the past. The thing is, they have not happened this rapidly, and we did not have life established on the planet the way we do now. And to really expand on what I mean is, some of the big climate changes from the ice age to the warm-up from that in the past happened over thousands of years. What we're doing right now is happening over 100 years or even less in some cases. So that doesn't give humanity as much of a chance to adapt. Now, let's also take you back to when those climate changes happened in the past from the ice ages. We did not have a society set up the way that we do now. The Earth is always going to be fine in the long run. It's our life that we've established on this planet. That's what's at risk. We have a lot of money, a lot of property, a lot of lives on our coastlines with those seas rising pretty quickly. So we have to prepare accordingly. We have a lot of people who live in areas where food and water security is being threatened, and heat is increasing at a much bigger pace than these types of cold snaps. And are people prepared for that? Those are the things that we are challenged with right now. So we've always had these climate changes, even without the smokestacks. And when you go back in time, you can really look through ways that we've been able to establish these long-term trends in temperatures is that getting through ice cores in the poles or going and getting sediment off the deep ocean floors or taking tree cores, out of our trees, we can go back in time and see what the atmosphere was like in those times. And almost always, you see a high level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere when it's warm, and a low level when it's cold. So there's a huge correlation with high CO2 during the warm phases, low CO2 in the cold phases, and we're putting more of that CO2 into the atmosphere.
Bernadette Woods-Plackey, Chief Meteorologist and Director of Climate Central's Climate Matters Program, thank you for the information and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, listeners. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Stick with us.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? And what can a tuna cannery in the middle of the Pacific tell us about taxes? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator, a new podcast from Planet Money, where in every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Get it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the extreme weather happening across the country this hour. And I'm speaking this hour with Dale Eck, head of forecast operations for the Americas at the Weather Channel. And joining me now from Natick, Massachusetts, is WBUR meteorologist Dave Epstein. Dave, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane.
So the Washington Post today calls this New England so-called bombogenesis a sight to behold from a meteorological perspective. What are you seeing in all this up here?
Well, absolutely. And bombogenesis is a noun which describes the process in which a storm intensifies really rapidly. And in order to be qualified as a meteorological bomb, the storm has to intensify 1 millibar per hour for 24 hours. This one has done double that. So 48 millibars in a day. So pretty amazing meteorologically.
So we're hardy New Englanders, right? We're no strangers to tough winter weather. What's the biggest concern in the Northeast, at least, with this one?
Right. And one of the things we've been talking about today is that a foot of snow, where it's a lot of snow, it's not an unprecedented amount. We'll certainly shovel it and get out of things pretty quickly. But along the coastline, because the storm got so intense so quickly, it's produced a lot of wind. So already in places like Nantucket, Massachusetts, Wellfleet, we've seen wind gusts to minimal hurricane force. And because we have the strong winds, that can create power outages. And then we have the very cold air moving in post-storm. So temperatures during the nighttime will fall into the single digits around this part of New England, and then we'll get near and below zero as we head for Friday night and Saturday night. And if you don't have power, that creates a situation where it's not only unsafe for the person, but you can have things like burst pipes.
Right. Well, and I'm looking at wind chill here well below zero. In some places, I'm seeing 35 below. Could that be? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, you are, especially as we head for the daytime tomorrow and tomorrow night with those winds still gusting behind this storm, 20 to 35 miles an hour. You add in a temperature only a few degrees within zero, and then you do get those extreme wind chills. So I expect to see many wind chill advisories, if not wind chill warnings, especially up across ski country for Friday and perhaps continuing into Saturday.
A lot of places across the country, 1 to 3 inches an hour. How much are we seeing? How much snow accumulation do you expect?
So generally in the Boston area all the way up to Maine, we're looking at 10 to 14 inches of snow. There'll be a little bit less in the mountains, 6 to 10 inches across the higher ski elevations because they're a little further away from the storm. There could be some places which end up with 18 inches of snow because we get what we call banding during these extreme nor'easters. So there's areas where you get a lot of lift, you get a little more snow, it's a little heavier. We've even seen thunder snow this morning with rates of 2 to 3 inches an hour. And on the other side of the band, you have a little bit less snow. So we'll see that setting up throughout the afternoon and into the early evening.
So I know you have to go, Dave Epstein. Patriots still have practice today. No excuses, Dave. No excuses.
Yeah, that I don't know. That's up to Bill.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for the time and for your expertise and for sticking with us around the clock. Dave Epstein, WBUR meteorologist. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Here's Donnie in Atlanta, Georgia. Donnie, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hey, Jane, how are you?
Thank
you
for taking my call. You bet. Go ahead.
I have more of a comment, if anything. It's just really nice seeing the seasons change since after a couple of winters we've had warm weather during Christmas and the holidays. It feels kind of good to be able to bundle up and put on gloves and kind of enjoy the cold.
Well, I guess my question for you, Donnie, do you have the ability to clear all this snow? I mean, can you guys deal with it down there?
Well, you know, we don't get much. We got one layer of snow like last month sometime. But I think after the Snowmageddon happened, I think they're like well prepared. If they hear anything, the flurries or anything, they got the salt trucks out, the plow trucks out. So we don't have to deal with too much craziness. Just enjoying the cold weather.
All right. Well, enjoy it. And thanks for the call. I really appreciate it from Atlanta, Donnie. Thank you. Let's go to West Lafayette, Indiana. Kevin is on the line. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I heard Dale mention those atmospheric ridges and troughs, and I wondered how much that contributes to the ongoing drought we've seen in California over the last few years and how that's contributing to forest fires and combating those fires, and whether that ridge is pushing a lot of the weather north and how, say, an El Nino might contribute to that weather pattern.
Great question, Kevin. Thank you. Dale Eck?
Well, I think what really attributed a lot to the fires that they had in California was they had an unbelievable winter last year with copious amounts of rain and very heavy mountain snow, and so that brought them out of a 3 to 4 year drought. What then happened was all of the foliage that resulted from all the liquid and all the rain that fell, it dried up after the winter, and that's why it was such a volatile fire season, because of you had all this dry vegetation that was caused by the very wet winter. As far as what we've seen in recent years, we do, with the warmer atmosphere, we are seeing more of the strong ridges that get parked for long periods of time. And because of that, some areas are likely to get into drought that's going to last a few years. But the atmosphere tends to go in cycles, and eventually, like we saw last winter, the rains came to Florida and the snows came. But I do believe that this pattern that we're in right now, California's starting to get dry again. I mean, I think the reservoirs are fine from what happened last year, but if this type of pattern continues, then once again, we'll probably see them go back into they could go back into a drought cycle.
Kevin, thanks so much for the question. Glad you called. A lot of listeners have some comments here. Ray says, I'm a kindergarten teacher in Virginia. I had an emotional moment a few months ago realizing that the seasonal curriculum we teach may no longer be relevant. Extreme is the new normal. It's time to acknowledge and adjust to our new climate. Here's another. People I feel sorry for are utility workers. They are going to be expected to fix everything ASAP, and it's going to be wickedly cold and windy. Amen to that. And here's Wesley. Not fair. Here in northern Vermont, we're getting just a glancing blow. Our local ski resorts are snow-starved, not to mention that it's 10 below zero. Nonetheless, send snow north, please. Let's go to Jill now in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Jill. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. I'm on the road in Savannah, and I've been on the road for about 12 hours on my way down south, and I'm seeing stranded vehicles everywhere, a lot of stranded tractor trailers. And
how fast is traffic moving along?
About 5 miles an hour, but it's moving now. It wasn't moving last night, so that's definitely a good sign.
And I'm reading here, my producer says you got stranded last night. Is that true?
Yep. A couple miles back, I just got back on the road. Traffic just started moving again, so hopefully I'll get to my destination at some point today.
Where are you exactly, Jill?
Savannah, just outside of Savannah on the border of South Carolina and Georgia.
Wow. All right. You be careful out there. Thanks so much for the call. En route in a lot of snow and a big mess. Thank you, Jill. Here's Don in Berwick, Maine. Hi, Don. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Well, go ahead.
I just want to make a comment. I'm actually out working in a storm right now as we speak. We're waiting for the worst of it to get here. It hasn't started yet, but it's coming down steady. And I did have a question.
I've noticed.
I've been working with the environment for most of my life, and I've noticed some extreme weather patterns starting to form. In the summers, we've seen extreme heat. This past summer, and the summer before that, we were dealing with extreme high 90s through 2, 3, even sometimes more than a month in the summer with very little rain. And now we're getting creamed with this extreme cold and significant snowfall. And I was wondering, is this something that is just going to continue? Is this forever for as long as humanity is left on the planet? Or is it eventually going to taper off and
turn back,
change back to the way it
used to? Yeah, it's a good question, Don. Thank you. Dale Eck?
I think it does relate to the more highly amplified jet stream pattern. So when it does dip south and it gets stuck that way for a while, it can be cold for a couple of weeks. And when it also, when you get one of those big ridges that happen to, that build across the globe, when they get over you, they also get locked in for long periods of time. So I think the idea of extreme temperature is going to be something we're going to live with for a while. I think we're going to have times where in the winter it's not going to be that cold. It's going to be very mild and people are going to miss the cold. And then especially in the summertime, that's obviously where you really feel when you get under one of these big ridges how hot it can be. And it just seems it can last for a week or 2 weeks, and drought comes with that as well.
Don, thanks so much for the call. Here's Dick in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Dick. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. What I wanted to ask about was a follow-up on a question that the gentleman asked about the melting of the ice caps, reducing the salinity of the ocean waters. I heard a theory a while back that that would cause a shift or a change of course of the Gulf Stream and eventually could, in several decades, lead to a new ice age in the Northern Hemisphere.
Hmm. Dick, thank you. Dale, what do you see? What do you think?
Not my feel, my expertise in this one. If Bernadette was on, she'd probably have a better answer for this. But obviously, there are ocean currents that go around the globe, and there's obviously with ice melt, the salinity of the ocean will change some, and that can affect the currents. But I don't believe any of what we are seeing, and I haven't read anything about any resulting ice age coming from what's currently happening. It would be more the opposite, that we'd continue to see the globe warming, and there'd be less episodes of cold, especially in the winter months.
Dale Eck, you've talked to us about the sub-zero temperatures, and I wanted to play this sound here because these low temperatures are forcing some to turn to drastic measures to get warm. Here's a New York City resident on NBC's Today Show whose apartment building was without heat for 5 days.
Only reason you feel this little bit of heat you feel now is because I got that stove on.
Which is dangerous.
Of course it is. The alarm has gone off 2 or 3 times. You understand? But you got to keep warm some kind of way or they'll find you up in here dead, frozen to death.
And at a news conference yesterday, Republican Governor of South Carolina, Henry McMaster, said that even when the snow ends in their state, these freezing temperatures are going to stick around.
What we're seeing now is snow and freezing rain in some parts of the state, particularly, as I said, along the coast. And it is cold, 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 and it's going to stay cold.
And here's CNN's Jeannie Moss talking about these record-breaking cold temperatures.
How cold is it? Cold enough for the Calgary Zoo to temporarily bring its penguins indoors before letting them out again. Cold enough to freeze a shark. At least 3 of them were found washed up on Cape Cod. Likely stranded due to cold shock, noted the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy.
So, Dale Eck, people need to protect themselves. I'm looking at a list here from the Red Cross. Go through some of these with me. Be careful with space heaters. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. Space heaters, you've got to make sure. It's just best to, if you're not in the room with the space heater, probably a good idea to turn it off and don't just leave it unattended. Because and obviously keeping things and clothing and paper away from them also makes sense. But I think the best rule of thumb is if you're using a space heater to be in the room when it's turned on.
Check your carbon monoxide and smoke detectors and keep the thermostat steady.
Yeah, I think you would tend to use a lot more energy if you're raising and lowering the temperature. So if you allow it to go down while you're, let's say, a lot of people have programmable thermostats, so you'll allow the temperature to get cooler in your house when you're gone, let's say during the day when you're at work, then, you know, it's got to work hard when the temperature goes back up. Also, because of pipes and stuff, if you let your temperature get a little too low, you've got your sink and then the doors closed in the cabinet, and then that a colder house makes it even colder near the walls where those pipes are, and they can get frozen and burst.
A lot of frozen pipes out there we've been hearing about around here. Let's go to Lake James, North Carolina. Will is on the line. Hi, Will. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I was just curious if the poles, the magnetic poles, might be a factor in the weather as well, because I understand that we're due for them to flip ends. We're long overdue for that to happen, and it hasn't happened. I'm wondering, perhaps it could be, and that could be also affecting.
All right, Dale Eck, do you know anything about that?
Don't have any knowledge about that. I mean, I've always known the North Pole and the South Pole, and I think they're always going to be where they are.
All right,
I haven't heard anything like
sorry
that.
We couldn't help you on that one. Dimitri in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Jane, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just driving. I'm not in Columbia right now. I was a couple hours ago. But I'm driving back to Raleigh.
You're on the roads. How are they?
Well, it's not bad. I'm about to cross the border on 95, get into North Carolina. There's snow on the sides of the road, but the roads are pretty clear. I mean, it could get spotty a little bit, but I'm going about 70 miles right now, into 70 miles, and roads are clear, no ice. It was bad on 20 right before I got to 95. It was really icy. Things are pretty good. I've seen a couple of accidents and cars on the sides of the road and stuff, people stranded. But they're trying to clear out the roads, and I've seen the plowers going in. But it's not bad over here, so I'm
all right.
5 minutes from the border.
Well, be safe out there, and we appreciate you checking in. Dimitri, they're somewhere in South Carolina. Thank you so much. All right, Dale Eck, about a minute left here. Send us out on this massive storm. What's ahead? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, like I said, I think I mentioned a little earlier in the segment that what we are looking at is it is going to be very cold following this storm, especially in the eastern U.S., right through the weekend, or at least into the weekend, and then I think things are going to relax. So that's good news. As we head into next week, we are definitely going to notice temperatures coming back up to near average, maybe even a little above average, and probably no big cold or heat outbreaks after that we're seeing in the 1 to 2 week period. But definitely frigid now, but I think by Monday and Tuesday, it's going to feel a lot better.
Fingers crossed on that. We'll keep you to your word. Dale Eck, thank you so much for taking the time today. Head of Forecast Operations for the Americas at the Weather Channel. Dale, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you, Jane.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, our week in the news. Until then, I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. Stay safe out there.